Welcome to Bible Talk. This is a podcast where we're going to read the Bible.
And then we're going to talk about it, because it's a podcast for everyday people. We're in Matthew chapter 8, starting in verse 23, under the subheading, Jesus Calms the Storm.
Okay, would you like me to start reading?
I sure would, Ivy.
Okay. Then he got into the boat, and his disciples followed him. Suddenly a furious storm came up on the lake, so that the waves swept over the boat, but Jesus was sleeping. Wow. The disciples went and woke him, saying, Lord, save us, we're going to drown. He replied, you of little faith, why are you so afraid? Then he got up and rebuked the winds and the waves, and it was completely calm. The men were amazed and asked, what kind of man is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him.
So here's a story that is amazing for several reasons that I think sometimes gets, because it's just, you know, four verses or so, gets tucked away into the Gospel of Matthew and seen as kind of a neat little story. But I think it's profound. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
When they get into the boat, or they when they follow him, and this furious storm comes onto the lake. First of all, the word furious there. It's not used to describe something that's, oh, wow, notable. Furious is, it's hectic. It's coming in really, really, the winds are fast, the waves are high. It says that the waves are sweeping over the boat, not up onto the boat, but over the top of it. And this is not a huge body of water that they're on, most likely. They're not in the open sea where you would expect these kinds of things. So this is a almost like a generational storm that's being described here. And in the midst of it, Jesus is sleeping. Do you think, Ivy, that Jesus was not aware of the weather forecast, or that he went below deck to sleep, or what? I don't know if he was below deck or not. I don't know how big this boat was.
But, right.
He's asleep somewhere on the boat. Do you think that Jesus was completely unaware? And what do you think the point is here in this story? Because the disciples come to him in verse 25 feeling fearful for their life. Save us, we're going to drown.
Right.
So what's this story in the gospel for?
Well, I mean, I think it could be a couple of things. One, like underscoring the humanity of Jesus. People sleep when they're tired, you know, and he's coming off of, you know, a pretty fast and furious little tour there. So, one, it could just be so that it underscores the humanity of Jesus. Look, this guy was just like you. He just got done working, you know, a solid 60, you know, and gets in this boat and he's exhausted. He's tired. To answer your question directly, do I think he was not aware? I think he was fully aware, you know, just as much as he was fully aware once he was awakened that he could calm the sea, you know?
Yeah. So Jesus is very relaxed in this setting.
Yes, he is.
Completely relaxed to the point where he's able to sleep. His disciples are completely the opposite.
Yeah, they're in a mad state of panic.
The contrast, I think, is the most important element to remember from this passage or from this story. The contrast of feeling out of control, if you're the disciples, and helpless.
Right, yeah.
And being completely in control, if you're Jesus.
Right, to the point that you're completely calm, you know?
And so it's really noteworthy to us and instructive, if we'll let it be, that what we believe to be life-threatening does not necessarily get Jesus all worked up.
Sure.
He is not as urgent. He is not as concerned by the events that we find to be, you know, absolutely acute and important in life, and this has to go this way, and it has to go this way right now. And Jesus is comfortable with that. And so how does that apply to us?
Well, I think that to me, it kind of rolls into the very next, the next interaction in Jesus's response in verse 26, you know, that oftentimes our fear our fear comes from a place of faithlessness. And because Jesus had incredible faith, obviously, mm-hmm. he wasn't shook up by these things.
Yeah.
These things that seem critically important to me are really just my lack of faithfulness being revealed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's why he, you know, didn't just rebuke the winds and the waves. He also rebuked the disciples in the boat.
Yeah, he questions their faith. You know, you picture the scene and Jesus awakened is almost bothered by, why did you even bother waking me up?
Right.
This is not as big a deal as you are making it out to be. And I think in our lives, we do this a lot.
Right.
We place God in a circumstance with our prayers, or place God in a position with our prayers where it's like we're trying to wake him up and trying to get him to have a response to something that we believe is massive in its significance
right.
and importance. And when God doesn't necessarily awaken to answer that prayer or to calm those waves, we think there's something wrong with God or something wrong with us that he didn't come to our rescue.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
When in reality, because of the perch upon which he sits, he just has a significantly greater perspective and he's just not...
he's not rattled by it.
He's not rattled and he's not beholden to our emotional response. So, you know, when this is all done, just imagine... You know, these guys thinking to themselves, what just happened?
Right.
The implications of what they were experiencing, last thing about this story before we move on, is really, I think, a turning point for them, because they had seen Jesus
right.
heal other people. They had seen Jesus do miracles that were impressive for other people. But in this moment, they were personally saved.
Right.
From danger. They were personally saved from what they believed was going to be death. So coming out of this experience, Jesus is now more than just rabbi and more than redeemer of other people. He
Correct.
Is their rescuer. And I
yes.
think that's going to put some pep in their step there.
I completely agree with you. And I love the question that they ask themselves there. Like, what kind of man is this? Like, because before I got in this boat, I felt like I was... pretty solid on that.
I thought I understood it.
And then...
this is another level.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, this is not at all what any of them were anticipating, clearly, because they were shocked by that, you know?
Yeah, good stuff.
Okay.
Keep on. Verse 28.
When he arrived at the other side in the region of Gadarenes, two... demon-possessed men coming from the tombs met him. They were so violent that no one could pass that way. "What do you want with us, Son of God?" they shouted. "Have you come here to torture us before the appointed time?" Some distance from them, a large herd of pigs was feeding. The demons begged Jesus, "If you drive us out, send us into the herd of pigs." He said to them, "Go." So they came out and went into the pigs, and the whole herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and died in the water. Those tending the pigs ran off, went into the town and reported all of this, including what had happened to the demon-possessed men. Then the whole town went out to meet Jesus, and when they saw him, they pleaded with him to leave their region.
Okay, so... this story is echoed in Mark 5 and then again in Luke chapter 8. And in those other accounts, it's a single demon-possessed man. In this account, it's two demon-possessed men.
Correct.
So there's a possibility that these are not a retelling of the same story, but that it's not the only time Jesus sent demons into a herd of pigs. He could have done it more than once. Or that the perspective that Matthew had remembers things differently than the other guys. This doesn't necessarily make the Bible, you know, flawed and problematic. It just sometimes people remember different details when they are, you know, recounting a story. But long story short, the men were rescued from something that possessed them.
Correct.
Demonic forces that possessed them. Let's stop for a second.
Okay.
What's up with demonic forces? Have they gone away? Because the Bible speaks of them in New Testament times, people being possessed by demons. Here we sit in 2024. Mm-hmm. Does this just not happen anymore? Or do we call it something else?
Right. You know, it's kind of interesting because I've heard different theories on it. One, that because they had limited scientific understanding, that they just kind of labeled it that, just like you fill in the blanks of stuff with lore or whatever. But they needed to have a reason for it, and that was their explanation.
So they just called it demon possession.
Right, and now we're smarter, and we understand, oh, there's mental illness or whatever. but I think from my own conviction, I absolutely don't think this was a situation where, you know, lore was applied in the scriptures.
Oh, this is a dialogue happening between Jesus and these demons.
Yeah. And so my perspective is absolutely this was demonic, and I do not think that demons have gone away. I think they can affect people. If they affected people here and nothing has changed between this moment and now, I do think that it still exists, and I do think it's possible that there are behaviors and circumstances that probably get labeled something else that have a demonic presence. Mm,
there are a work of spiritual forces,
right,
not just
mm-hmm.
mental illness. They can both exist, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's not either or. There's demon possession or there's mental illness.
Because if you think, if someone is not whole, whether it's physical or mental or emotional, whatever it might be, they're in a susceptible state. Mm-hmm. You know, any of us who are in a weakened state are susceptible to spiritual forces.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a, gotta be honest, I mean, it's a terrifying scripture because you're thinking, you know, implications. If this is the way things currently are, then these forces are still around us, and and we're susceptible in the same way.
And the comfort we can take from it is, and the takeaway from the story, I believe, is that though these forces and entities can exist, can possess, and can wreak havoc, they are not any more powerful than the wind and the waves in that lake.
Right.
Jesus had command over those winds and those waves. They went where he told them to go. And these demons, indeed, went where Jesus told them to go.
Absolutely.
And,
to the point
where
they're begging him, you know.
Yeah. They understood from the jump who Jesus was in comparison to them, and that his level of power was significantly greater than theirs. So he sends them into the herd of pigs. Could have cast them off somewhere, I guess, somewhere else, and they would have inhabited someone else. But they go into the pigs drown, the demons drown with them. I don't know how that all works, but that's beyond the scope here of our podcast. I just know that Jesus solved the problem.
He did solve the problem.
Okay. And then there were a pile of dead pigs in the water. That's probably not awesome for those who had to clean up. But
and I think it's interesting that, one, that they were like, why were you traversing through this area in the first place as Jews? You know what I mean?
Because it's a place where pigs are being herded, which means
it's all unclean.
It's farming.
Yeah.
It means they're eating the pigs. Mm-hmm. This is an unclean place because Jews wouldn't eat pigs.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're in a graveyard. You know? Yeah, that's not good. That's not good either.
Shortcut's a shortcut, I guess.
Right, I guess, yeah.
All right, we're out of time here.
Okay. Well, we appreciate you joining us, and we would love to leave you with this reminder.
To not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves, but to do what it says.
Do what it says. It's a good time. I love doing this podcast with you.
Aw.